Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, January 19th, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is proud to sponsor the 2014 Eureka Springs Indie Film Fest, January 23rd through the 25th at the City Auditorium. This three-day film fest will feature entries from across the United States, plus a Made in Arkansas block of films from AETN and other Arkansas documentary filmmakers. Screenings, panel discussions, workshops, and more will be included. Single-day and three-day passes are available at esindiefilmfest.com or 363-8185.
Ahead on this edition of Weekend Ozarks, lions and tigers and wampus cats. We learn what's in a name when it comes to high school mascots around the state.
Plus, lung cancer cases are on the decline in Arkansas, while the use of solar energy systems on the rise.
But first, Arkansas schools were in session for the first full week last week since the holiday season and winter weather, and there was plenty of news related to education. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has more in this week's Week in Review.
The past week has been rife with news briefs regarding different schools in the area. Republican contender for Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson on Monday offered the second policy initiative of his campaign. In Springdale, Hutchinson called for expanding computer science education by changing state law, allowing high school students to get a credit toward graduation through such a class, and making sure it's available in every high school in the state.
We have to educate our young people in the language of the workforce of the future, which is computer code. And when I talk about computer science, I'm not talking about the ability to do Microsoft Word or to keyboard. This is the ability to really write a foreign language, JavaScript. It's computer code that is the language of the workplace.
Hutchinson said it would help expand high-tech, computer-related jobs in Arkansas, but in a statement, the Democratic Party of Arkansas argued that Hutchinson's record on education shows that in the past he has worked to water down standards for public schools and voted against funding science education and reducing class sizes. From modernizing courses, we go to retrofitting extracurricular school facilities. Renovations to football facilities are in the near future for Greenland High School. The Greenland School Board recently approved a contractor to begin site preparations for the work, which will include a 6,000-square-foot fieldhouse and concession stand, new bleachers to replace the decades-old wood seating for home spectators, a new press box, a new 120-meter running track and jump pit, and a new entrance ticket booth and fencing around the stadium. Charles Cudney, Greenland School Superintendent, says that school patrons will start seeing the changes in the next few weeks as the contractor begins site preparation work.
That involves building the dirt pad for the buildings to sit on and doing some renovation to the water drainage system to improve that. And that will be happening over the next month or so. And then we're hoping once that's completed, we'll be at a point where we can open bids for the actual building construction to start, which I would anticipate happening mid-March with completion prior to the beginning of the next school year, 2014.
He says that parents, Greenland Booster Club members, and school staff in previous years tried to raise funds for the renovation, but failed to receive the necessary funds to actually begin the construction process. Instead, district officials have refinanced some current bond debt to raise about $700,000 in order to begin the renovation this year. And with a new high school under development in Centerton for Bentonville Public Schools, school district officials are already searching for a name and mascot for the building. A group of 19 student leaders at Bentonville High School has been tasked with coming up with ideas to suggest to the school board. But community members are also encouraged to send in ideas for mascots or the school's name. Mary Lay, communications director for the school district, says that while few mascot suggestions have come in so far, she has received quite a variety of suggestions for the school's name.
A lot of them are thinking about the principal that we unfortunately and very sadly lost in the last couple of weeks that had been an assistant principal at our high school and then a principal of our new Fulbright Junior High. And then one young man sent the name Dillard, like the Dillard store, because he had been an Arkansas resident. And then one came up with the idea of West Ridge or something like that because it's on the west side and on a ridge. And then another person came in with a former politician's name. But here's one that just came in that said Bentonville West High School, Westside High School. And we had another one called Benton Central High School because it's centrally located in our county. So we're getting, for just opening my computer a couple hours ago, we're getting quite a few suggestions.
Lay urges school district residents to email her any suggestions for the school's name or mascot at mley@bentonvillek12.org. Suggestions will be taken until February 20th. And we can't talk about schools without bringing up higher education. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith is in the process of developing its first master's degree program. Dr. Ray Wallace, Provost and Senior Vice Chancellor of UAFS, says that the online Master's of Science in Healthcare Administration is a logical development for the university and states a need for more highly trained healthcare professionals in the local and state economy.
We've grown quite dramatically in terms of our offerings at the four-year level. And so this is a natural progression. Hospitals, healthcare administrators, some of our graduates in nursing, some of our business graduates and their employers started to call us and say, hey, what are our opportunities here? And so we looked at our strengths, our bench strength in particular areas in the health sciences. And healthcare administration was certainly our strongest area.
This isn't the first time the role and scope of UAFS has changed. Since joining the University of Arkansas system in 2002, the university has shifted from primarily offering two-year degrees to offering several four-year bachelor's degree programs. We'll have more on the development of the UAFS master's degree program on tomorrow's edition of Daily Ozarks. From the Herald and Blanche Calk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
For at least a decade nationally, the number of lung cancer diagnoses each year has been falling, as has mortality from lung cancer. However, the rates in Arkansas were still climbing until about 4 years ago, though that is not the case in women. The rates of lung cancer in women are still inching up. Last week, I spoke with Dr. Gary Wheeler, medical director for the Tobacco Prevention and Cessation Program in Arkansas. I began by asking Dr. Wheeler why Arkansas was so behind the rest of the country.
Well, there are a couple of factors. Certainly, regionally, there's been parts of the country like Massachusetts and California who have had statewide programs to reduce the amount of tobacco use in their states for a very long time. And we have really gotten into the game late. The second issue is we're a relatively poor state, and we know that people who are on the low end of the socioeconomic curve tend to have higher rates of smoking, and that may be one of the reasons that we're seeing a higher rate of cancer in our states compared to the rest of the nation. I should mention that even though our rates are going down, we're still probably 30% higher than the rest of the country in terms of our rates of cancer mortality as well as the incidence of diagnoses. But we are seeing trends downward, as I said, finally.
You mentioned programs, programs directed toward, getting people to quit smoking or not smoking. And are those things like stamp out smoking that I know I've seen commercials for?
Right. We have a cessation program, which has lots of pieces. One of which is there's lots of advertising that we do. We buy media to remind people about the dangers of smoking and direct them to our quit line. The quit line is 1-800-QUIT-NOW. If you call that number, you will be put in touch with a counselor who will do an introductory assessment, give you guidance on things that you individually may need to do to quit. Now, we do other things as well through our cessation program. We work with partners. For instance, we're starting a program with the corrections programs in Arkansas, so that when people leave incarceration, that they don't start back smoking. You know, you can't smoke in jail, but as soon as people get out, they tend to go back. So we're working with corrections to keep people from relapsing. We've had pregnancy programs in the state to help women who are pregnant to quit. We've had collaborative projects with mental health programs throughout the state to try to make sure that providers, when they're addressing people's other substance abuse, make sure that they include tobacco in that. And that's very successful. So there's a number of programs, but the stamp out smoking is the sort of imprimatur that we use around all these programs. So we have tried to couch the issue of quitting in terms of, you know, not only protecting yourself, but protecting your family and not being afraid to ask for help and letting people know that it takes multiple efforts before you succeed at quitting.
It's definitely not easy, that's for sure.
No, it's not.
Well, you mentioned that while it's down in general, it's still on the rise with women.
It is.
Why? Why?
Actually, we refer to that as the Virginia Slims effect. So, at you know, 50 years ago, literally this week, Luther Terry put out the first Surgeon General's report. And in that report, he linked smoking to men's cancer. But it was a few more years before the linkage to women was established. During that time, the tobacco company took a very aggressive approach to dispute the scientific information linking tobacco and cancer. And they literally say in the secret papers that were released a few years ago that their goal was to keep the American public confused about the relationship of cancer and smoking. So they developed all these new campaigns, and one of the most successful was the Virginia Slims campaign, where they put out these so-called low-tar nicotine cigarettes that were designed in a fashionable way with great advertising, and they went after women. Because up to that point, women were a relatively small market, and they exploded that market.
That was decades ago. I mean,
it was, yeah. But I mean, you have to realize that a lot of the injury that occurs with tobacco use may not manifest itself in the form of cancer for, you know, further decades. So if women were still smoking, and then, you know, and then it took a while for us as a public health entities to begin to focus on women and point out that, you know, gee whiz, you know, we're starting to see more lung cancer than we are breast cancer. There was literally a delay in addressing this issue on a gender basis. And that's been identified as one of the major effects that's led to the delay in reduction in women's cancer and new diagnoses of cancer.
Well, and it's never too late to quit if you are a smoker.
It's never too late. We estimate that about 5,000 people a year in Arkansas die from some tobacco-related cause. Sometimes it's related to heart disease. Sometimes it's from emphysema. Sometimes it's from cancer. Sometimes it's from infection because smoking, breathing in secondhand smoke or smoking doubles your risk of virtually all infections. Sometimes it's from SIDS. So there are many, many ways that tobacco harms health, and that cumulative effect results in about 5,000 people a year in Arkansas who die from smoking, and about 500 who die from secondhand smoke. So it's absolutely imperative if you want to take care of yourself. The most important first step would be to eliminate tobacco from your lifestyle.
Well, and what about for those that are maybe thinking of starting to smoke, maybe a young person that thinks it's cool or just don't do it?
Yeah, I hate to use the, you know, just say no message. There's a lot of things that draw young people to smoke. If you pick up a Sports Illustrated, there's going to be all sorts of ads that are targeted at young people. If you walk by a service station, there's going to be lots of billboards and banners and everything else, again, using things that target young people. The flavorings that are put in chew tobacco, you just have to be aware that there's a huge industry out there who does nothing except make products that harm people. They want customers. And when people die, they go after young people because young people are customers that they can potentially keep all of their lives until those customers die. So they are really going after young people, and I think most young people don't realize that they're targets. And I think that's one of the most important tools, is just alerting them that there's, you know, the tobacco pusher man out there waiting to seduce them and entice them into smoke.
Well, and e-cigarettes, those are pretty popular these days.
You know, e-cigarettes are a big concern. They are a nicotine-containing product. The cigarette itself is the drug delivery device. There is all the harm from e-cigarettes that you would get from regular cigarettes that contain nicotine in terms of the addiction potential and the impact of nicotine on cardiovascular function. So a lot of the heart disease, hypertension, and stuff we presume may be present with e-cigarettes when they're used on a regular basis. You know, it's a brand new product. We haven't yet collected all the scientific information that we need to know about the vapor that's released as well as the vapor that's inhaled. We know that there are new compounds that we've never heard of before. We don't know what the long-term effects of exposure to those will be. So from my point of view, e-cigarettes are made by the same companies that have been killing us with other tobacco products. I have no reason to trust them at all about the safety of their products. My presumption is that, you know, it will take many, many years before anybody will convince me that they're safe. And in the meantime, I would discourage everyone from trying these products.
Thank you, Dr. Wheeler. I had been curious as to, you know, a medical opinion on e-cigarettes, because they're kind of everywhere right now. So
there will be new information from the FDA within the next couple of months. I think they're in the process of putting together some formal federal statements on e-cigarettes.
All right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. That was Dr. Gary Wheeler, medical director of the Arkansas Tobacco Prevention and Cessation Program. To find out more about their free programs, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or ask your doctor about ways to quit. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, the rise of Fox News CEO Roger Ailes. We talk with journalist Gabriel Sherman about his new book on Ailes. And Justice Sonia Sotomayor discusses her memoir, which describes her formative years growing up poor in the South Bronx, dealing with chronic illness, yet managing to get a good education. She's the first Hispanic Supreme Court justice. Join us.
Fresh Air Weekend begins this evening at 6 on 91.3 FM.
Residential and commercial solar energy system installation is on the rise in Arkansas, but as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, compared to other solar-rich states, Arkansas lacks incentives for solar deployment and utility standards. And this year, renewable energy advocates are facing organized opposition from carbon producers who don't want them on their grid.
Bill Morgan and his spouse, Michelle Austin, live on 40 acres in Hazel Valley, 20 miles southeast of Fayetteville. They operate several greenhouses, growing much of their food year-round, and live in an energy-efficient home, tapping electricity produced by a large pole-mounted solar array erected in a pasture this morning facing the low winter sun.
This 3,000-watt array here has been online for a little over a year. You know, and all the mathematics we did on it all panned out. So that's a third of it. We're putting in another 6,000 watts over the next couple of days.
Are you off grid or on grid?
We're on. We're putting it back into the grid and letting them hold on to the electricity for us.
Meaning Morgan doesn't house a bank of batteries to store produced energy. The direct current is piped to an inverter box fixed on a nearby Ozarks Electric-owned utility pole, transformed into alternating current, which supplies a house. Excess current is diverted into the power supply grid at large. Morgan is being compensated by the utility for the produced solar power through net metering.
Well, we're seeing a third credit on our bill every month from what we're generating, and that was exactly the way it was supposed to be.
The initial investment for the current solar setup was $13,000. The two new arrays will cost $22,000. A third of the cost is being paid for by the Fed through the Residential Renewable Energy Tax Credit Program, enacted in 2006.
It's real rewarding, you know, any sunny day like right now, and watch the meter of what I'm using spinning rather slowly and watch the one of what I'm generating really moving.
A four-man crew with Rocky Grove Sun Company based in Kingston is here today trenching and laying conduit pipe in preparation for the two new grid-tied arrays. Company founder Jim Dement.
So it's a win-win situation because it's not wasted in any way.
Rocky Grove Sun Company started up in 1986, serving mostly homesteaders and owners looking to source renewable power self-sufficiently off the grid, storing produced power on site. But grid-tied systems like this one are trending, and business for Rocky Grove is up 25% over the preceding year. Dement's partner is Flint Richter.
Grid-tied systems are the most efficient and easiest to install and design, so they should be the nation's, most popular system because they're what we really need. The battery-based systems they include a lot of lead and natural resources that we really don't need to include in lots of solar arrays.
Rocky Grove Sun Company negotiates with six different utilities across the three-state regions. The excess electricity is strictly regulated, says Jim Dement.
That excess power rolls over to the next month. If you need that, it'll keep rolling over until 4 months into the next year. So in most cases, that would use up any excess because, our worst solar years are solar months are November, December, and then it gets increasingly better January through February, but the probability is that you would use up any surplus that you might carry over.
The latest evolution in the state's net metering law, which are set by the state legislature in concert with the Arkansas Public Service Commission, a sustainable energy feed-in tariff bill, has been proposed three times in Arkansas, says Flint Richter, but has been soundly defeated by utilities' pushback.
A feed-in tariff would actually pay people to produce energy. So where you buy it for 10 cents, a feed-in tariff might pay you 20 cents to produce it, so you could actually make money from producing solar. And utilities would be forced to buy a certain amount of what you produce at a certain rate.
Feed-in tariffs, or FITs, was promulgated under the Carter administration's National Energy Act in the late 1970s, to encourage renewable energy conservation and development. Popular in the European Union, FITs are perceived in the United States by utilities as a burden upon ratepayers. But advocates say those utilities simply want to maintain production monopolies. Again, Flint Richter.
Germany has, their whole solar installation nationwide is fed by the feed-in tariff. That's why they have the largest amount of solar in the world. And they have half the solar resource we do.
Arkansas, Richter says, is ranked 16th in the nation for solar resources, the amount of sun that falls on our state, receiving on average more than 5,000 watts per square meter. Steve Patterson is executive director of the Arkansas Advanced Energy Association, which counts 100 members and businesses involved in energy efficiency, green energy product manufacturing, renewable energy production, as well as compressed natural gas production. AAEA also engages in policy advocacy at the federal, state, and regulatory level. Steve Patterson says while Arkansas counts 240 renewable energy facilities, we rank low in solar, but that's changing.
The solar industry is primed to take off here. It is already doing quite well as the price for solar has come down considerably in the last 2 years and is much more marketable and affordable to mainstream consumers.
Experts say carbon inputs in the United States are declining due to the shuttering of dirty coal plants and increased wind and solar energy facilities, which saw the largest growth in 2013. And one thing that's helping is a recent tweak in the state's net metering law.
Aggregate the energy consumption at more than 1 meter against the energy generated by a renewable energy facility, such as a geothermal installation or a windmill or a solar array.
So college and corporate campuses, farms, and rural water districts with multiple meters can see a capital offset on installation costs. But Arkansas lacks a renewable portfolio standard, a state regulation that would mandate that a certain percentage of the state's energy production come from renewable resources by specified target dates. For now, Patterson says, 10% of the state's energy comes from renewable sources, pointing to hydro and paper mill biomass in South Arkansas, as well as wind production in Texas and Oklahoma. Steve Patterson says we also lack any state incentives for solar.
As you know, the state doesn't have any tax credits or other incentives in place. So the only thing we are that is encouraging solar deployment in Arkansas is the federal tax credit.
And for a time, rebates from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, remember that? According to the Arkansas Energy Office based in Little Rock, it delivered $1.8 million in rebates, generating, Patterson says, $5.3 million in private investment. But clouds are gathering to block America's solar gain. This year, the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, for short, backed by carbon industry interests, members, and politicians, plan to disrupt expansion of renewable energy development. ALEC has generated model bills, which it reportedly plans to distribute to state legislatures to spur laws to charge residential and commercial renewable energy producers fees for the privilege of tapping onto the electrical grid. Again, Steve Patterson.
The renewable energy customer is, in fact, utilizing the transmission lines that are being supplied by other customers. But we'll also argue that that customer's personal investment in a renewable energy facility must be taken into account.
Back in sunny Hazel Valley in Washington County, the Rocky Grove Sun Company crew are acutely aware of pending ALEC bills that frame independent solar producers as freeloaders on the electrical grid. This is Flint Richter.
So it's not like these customers are paying zero, you know, with their solar or electric. They are already paying a monthly fee for the privilege of having a meter. And I think it's unfair to penalize, you know, solar customers who are actually making the grid more stable.
Owner Jimis Demet worries levying additional surcharges will discourage residential solar adoption.
Instead of being so concentrated on producing power, they should be more of a power broker.
And to make a point, Dement describes what will happen once they finish installing the two additional solar arrays on the Morgan Austin property.
So it'll be about, what, nine kilowatts of power. So if we have, say, five peak sun hours of getting 9 kilowatts, let's say, then that's 45 kilowatts a day. So, and then that times 30 keeps mounting up, and you're obviously producing a significant amount of your own power, if not all of it, and then some.
The average Arkansas home uses 900 kilowatt hours per month, more or less, or 30 per day. So the Morgan Austin home will soon be a major net producer of electricity. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The Arkansas Energy Office in Little Rock lists local solar power contractors as well as federal and state incentives for solar power.
This is Ozarks at Large. When we've taken some time to find out the inspiration for names in our region, we've concentrated on lakes, parks, streets, even cities. This month, we tried to find out what's in a name when it comes to school mascots. That's the kind of music you hear when you're put on hold. And if you ask people at school administration offices if they know the history of why their teams are the Tigers, Lions, or Bears, you'll hear plenty of this. That's because many schools have had their mascots for decades, and for most, nearly all, there isn't a certified date when the mascot was adopted. Fortunately, there are legends and stories for many schools, and we'll hear a few of them in a moment. First, some raw numbers. In Arkansas, the most popular high school mascot is the Tiger. There are 20 schools that use the Tiger. In fact, feline mascots are all over the place. 18 Panthers, a dozen Lions, 8 Wildcats, 6 Bobcats, 5 Leopards, 2 Cougars, and 1 Jaguar. Also popular, Bulldogs, 18 of them, Eagles, and Hornets. And there are no accepted theories why landlocked Arkansas is so enamored with Pirates. 11 schools selected Pirates as mascots. While there may be an interesting story why one school picked Yellow Jacket and another the Mustangs, the truly interesting stories are surely behind the unusual picks like Airedales and Little Johns. The former, the Airedale, is the chosen mascot for Alma, and it may have come from looking at the right place at the right time. Mike McSpadden is the assistant superintendent for the Alma School District. He says there is a legend that dates back to, people think, the 1920s.
And again, that's just a story. I don't have any kind of factual basis to back this up, but the story is that there were some administrators or teachers or some people involved with Alma High School, and they were having a discussion about what the mascot needed to be. Obviously, the school had been in existence, but apparently they had not really decided upon what a mascot was. And about that time, they were standing out in front of what was then Alma High School, and about that time, an Airedale dog was walking by or was out in that vicinity, or they saw an Airedale, and somebody said, well, how about the Airedales?
The choice stuck and conveniently gives the school an alliterative mascot, something fun to say. Mike McSpadden also points out that however the mascot was chosen, it also has given the school an ability to break away from the crowd, since there are very few teams anywhere called the Airedales.
I have not ever come across any. I know certainly there are not any others in the state of Arkansas, and I am not aware of any others anywhere in the United States, and that includes high schools and colleges. There may be some, but I have never heard of another one.
Safe to say that if Alma ever met Danville on the field or court, it would be the only matchup ever between Airedales and Little Johns. Danville in Yell County has cheered on the Little Johns for as long as anybody can remember.
I have been a Little John for a long time, and I'm very proud to be a Little John.
Nancy Berrick is the principal at Danville Elementary School. She's been either a teacher or administrator in the district for 33 years, and before that, she attended school in Danville, where she grew up.
A little history. There's been times throughout the years that people have tried to come up with, you know, maybe an animal, like a lion or a pirate or something physical or visual that you could see, and we were never happy with that. I believe one year back after World War I, we were a Wolverine or something, and nobody was happy with that, and they changed it back to the Danville Little Johns.
So what is this Little John that has so much loyalty among locals? Local, it turns out, is the key word. Little John is inspired by a local legend, a legend that is one of the most beloved for the state of Arkansas, of a French explorer and the woman who loved him. As the story goes, the explorer was given royal permission to seek land in what the French thought was the New World. His fiancée wanted to accompany him, but he refused because he thought the journey would be too dangerous. The resourceful woman disguised herself as a cabin boy to be close to her love. The ruse was so effective, according to legend, that even the object of her love didn't recognize her as his party crossed the ocean, navigated the Mississippi and Arkansas rivers, and eventually came to a mountain in Arkansas. When the party decided to return to France, the cabin boy became ill with a mysterious and eventually fatal malady. Upon the preparation for burial, the true identity was discovered. She was buried on the mountaintop, a mountain named for the nickname she had been given as a cabin boy, Petit Jean, or French for Little John.
Danville's located on the banks of the Petit Jean River. And, of course, Petit Jean, Petit Jean, is French for Little John. And we are in a beautiful area of west central Arkansas. We're in the Tri-Peaks region with Mount Magazine, Nebo, and then, of course, Petit Jean Mountain.
Unusual and tied to the immediate area. An A-plus mascot, right? Nancy Berrick thinks so, but she says when she was in school, the mascot was the target of jeering by students at other schools.
I played basketball throughout my high school career here, and it was not unusual to see my basketball number with a toilet and me being flushed, you know, down the Little John. But anyway, we are proud of it, and it's not something, like I said, is visual that you can see.
Unlike most schools, there is no emblem or physical manifestation of a Little John, no character to put on banners or ball caps. Nancy Berrick says when school administrators are asked by outsiders just what is a Little John, the proper response is
someone that's brave and courageous, someone that doesn't give up. I'm sure it was very dangerous for her to travel across the oceans and up into Indian territory and all, but she was courageous and brave and didn't give up and had a good heart. And that sums up what a Little John is.
Some mascots are one of a kind, and even if the exact story or date of origin isn't known, they make sense to the ear, the Elkin Elks or the Deer Antlers, for example. While most schools can't pinpoint the exact year or reason their mascot has become synonymous with their teams, at least one school in the region can. The Harrison Goblins have a family, or goblin tree, we can use for genealogical purposes.
I have heard the history, but I can't tell you what it is offhand.
That's fine, that's fine.
Okay, just a second. Let me transfer you to Linda.
Call the Harrison School Administration, and in about a minute or two, you'll be emailed the story. It turns out the goblin was born on Halloween 1926. Tom Millard, who had graduated in 1927, coined the name for the first issue of the school newspaper. The top story in that first issue, an account of the undefeated basketball team. Goblins stuck. The goblin, by the way, was grinning until 1968. That's when football coach Hewlin Quattlebaum wanted a meaner goblin. The official story says a junior on the 1968 football squad, Mike Thunder Thornton, ordered decals of a snarling goblin with ragged hair for the team's helmets. And the meaner goblin has remained the mascot ever since. No matter why a school has adopted its mascot, people get used to it, become downright passionate about it. And Mike McSpadden, assistant superintendent at Alma, says people there can be thankful it was an Airedale that walked by the school's administration way back when.
I don't know if that was some sort of an omen or a sign from God or even if it really happened. If that did happen, I'm just thankful that it wasn't a skunk that went by at that particular time.
Well, maybe one did, but it just didn't capture their imagination.
Maybe so. Maybe so. We don't want to be the skunk, so let's be the Airedales.
This is Ozarks at Large.
When Sheryl Sandberg was a little girl, the other kids used to call her bossy. But then she did become the boss, number two at Facebook. And today, she asks audiences all the time,
please raise your hand if as a boy you were ever called bossy. No hands go up.
But when she asks women,
all the hands go up.
I'm Guy Raz. Lessons from leaders next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour begins today at noon on KUAF.
During Friday's edition of Ozarks at Large, you heard an interview and performance by Eureka Springs-based musician Pearl Brick. During her recent visit to the Furman Garner Performance Studio, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda also asked Pearl about her guitar, which has quite the history.
It does. It's a triple-aught 18 Martin guitar. It's a 63 model, 1963, and I actually got it when I was pregnant with my daughter, who is now 20. Mm-hmm. Ordered it from Mass Street Music in Lawrence, Kansas. Just said, you know, we need a little bitty guitar for me to play. I never actually got to play it because it was something that we used for recording and stuff like that, but I still held on to it. And it's really funny when I go places and pull this guitar out, people slobber and try to talk me out of it. But my daughter Savannah has said no one will have this guitar but me. So
claim to it.
Yeah, exactly. She just like, back off, buddies. You know, this is, if anybody gets this guitar, it's going to be me. So
it still looks like it's in pretty good shape.
Well, you know, I don't play with a pick. Mm-hmm. And so I have kind of rubbed this little nasty thing here, but it's, you know, it's a durable guitar, and there isn't anything that plays like it to me. There, it just has, it's still got lots of songs left in it, you know, and that's what you want if you're a songwriter, is you want a guitar that you feel like really is full of music for you and full of songs for you and fits your, you know, this thing fits my body and fits my hands, and, you know, I have little stubby fingers like a troll. I don't know if you noticed that, but you got to have like a small guitar for that. So, yeah, it's an awesome instrument, and I am blessed to have it.
Well, would you like to play one more song for us on your lovely instrument?
I do. This is a song that I wrote about Eureka Springs, actually. Let's see if I can make this happen.
And what's it called?
Huh?
What's it called?
It's called Driving With My Eyes Closed.
Okay.
I'm driving with my eyes closed, going round the bend. Driving with my eyes closed, and the story never ends. I'm not afraid of dying, I know I will. Driving with my eyes closed, feel good.
walking with my eyes closed, skipping all the way. I'm walking with my eyes closed. I do it almost every day. I'm not afraid of falling, although I know I could. Walking with my eyes closed, it makes me feel good. Don't be afraid, now I am. I'm not in your lane, I'm not even not going your way. I'm not going, I'm not going. My lights off, cruising down the hill, driving with my lights off, but the moon is shining still. I'm not afraid of dying, I know I will. Driving with my lights off, it makes me
was Pearl Brick inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. You can see her perform at 7 o'clock Tuesday evenings at our Arsacas at the Depot in Fayetteville. More information is available at facebook.com/pearl.brick.
It is Sunday, January 19th, 2014. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. Good morning. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas.
And with us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspaper.
I have something cool to talk about.
What is that?
The announcement of Rogers Little Theater Season 29.
They did it.
Very exciting.
Yeah. Thursday night, was it?
Thursday night. I can't believe it's season 29. Golly, it makes me feel ancient. Because I remember when it was a gleam in Ed McClure's eye.
29.
And so here's what we got coming up. Fiddler on the Roof in September. Mm-hmm. That hasn't been done around here in a long time.
I guess not.
Not that I recall.
And I love that show. Lend Me a Tenor by Ken Ludwig in October. And that's been done around here quite a bit.
I was going to say, that sounds familiar.
Pretty popular show. It's the story of the world-famous Tito Morelli, El Stupendo, the greatest tenor of his generation, who's going to perform at the Cleveland Grand Opera Company, and then everything goes wrong.
A farce.
Wackiness ensues.
Yes.
A Christmas Story in December.
Like the movie A Christmas
mm-hmm.
Story? Okay.
Like you'll shoot your eye out and
right.
don't stick your tongue on the lamp pole.
With a leg lamp.
Mm-hmm, with the leg lamp.
And the Daisy Red Rider, right?
You know, I had never seen that movie until the first time RLT did the play. Maybe I should watch that.
You should. I have. You have now.
It's funny.
Okay,
yeah.
Did you know they made a sequel to the movie?
Yes, no. I haven't seen it.
I saw it, and it was you haven't missed a thing.
I wonder if we could get a leg lamp. It'd make your office
look really nice. Well,
you can.
They're sold online.
We can put
online.
It in the window facing the library.
We'll talk about that.
Okay.
All right.
Legally Blonde, the musical in February. The Arkansas premiere of the 2013 Tony Award winner for Best Play, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike by Christopher Durang. I do not know anything about this show.
Me either.
It's what I have from them is that it is full of smart Chekhov references. They're middle-aged siblings who share a home in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, where they bicker and complain about the circumstances of their lives, which sounds like every family dinner I've ever been to. And movie star sister comes in with her new boy toy, Spike. That okay. should be fun.
All right.
That happens in April of 2015. Also fresh from Broadway and new in Arkansas is The Other Place by Char White, coming up in May of next year. A potential breakthrough to a drug to combat dementia. This is the research. Researcher Julia Anna Smithton is lecturing to colleagues at a beach resort, glimpses an enigmatic young woman in a yellow bikini, and the mystery unravels. And apparently mystery ensues.
Okay, there you go.
And another first in Arkansas from the writer of Lombardi is Magic Bird by Eric Simonson in June. Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, of course.
Right, right.
Wondering if there was a sports theme.
And the musical for next summer?
Mm-hmm.
Not this summer, next summer.
So we're talking the summer of 2015.
Oh, wow.
Shrek the Musical.
Ah.
Seems like a very large undertaking.
Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
And green.
Yeah.
Also this afternoon, drop-in drawing from 1 to 4 at Crystal Bridges Museum. Broadway on Ice at 2 o'clock at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville.
Last chance to see that.
Tickets start at $29. And my favorite thing this time of year, 3 o'clock, there's an Eagle Watch tour. You know where to go for that. Hobbs State Park, 789-5000.
Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
It was 95 years ago this weekend that Popeye first was seen by the American public.
Popeye the Sailor Man.
Popeye the Sailor Man. It was in a comic strip called Thimble Theater. So the strip had actually existed for some time, and Popeye, on this weekend 95 years ago, was introduced as a new character.
Okay. So before, you know, because there was a cartoon that was on TV, the black and white cartoon.
Sure.
So this is way before that.
Yeah. And those cartoons, actually, I think, that you're talking about were first seen in theaters.
Okay.
They were before movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Before that, we're talking a comic strip, a Sunday comic strip. Popeye appeared in the strip Thimble Theater. The strip had been around for about 8 or 9 years before Popeye showed up.
Okay.
I bring all of this up because... our Sunday montage is inspired by the 95th birthday of Popeye.
I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. Popeye the Sailor Man. I'm strong to the finish because I eat me spinach. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
Now comes your moment of truth, little buddy.
Be of good cheer, Skipper. I will not spill the soup on the howls.
It's not far down to paradise, at least it's not for me. If the wind is right, you can sail away.
On such a day, I struck my first whale, a boy harpooner, 40 years and 1,000 lowerings ago. Why this madness of the chase?
We come on this loop, John B., my grandfather and me. Around Nassau Town we did run.
Whatever it is, it'll make a useful weapon. Let's get back to the ship.
Hercules.
Well, what is it?
You better put it back.
Why?
Remember what Jason said.
It won't be missed. Anyway... if the gods leave all this lying about unguarded, they obviously don't want it. Come on.
As the son of a sailor, I went out on the sea for it.
I told her the plan would work well.
Thank God you're right.
We'll have them by nightfall, I'd say.
I think we've got him, sir.
And the wind favors us this time.
Now don't count your eggs before they're in the pudding, Mr. Calamay. Still, if we can close this gap and get up behind her, she may well be ours.
I simply can't imagine what could be the matter. It's been such a pleasant day. What is it? Yes, Mr. Allnut?
All this foolish talk about the Louisa going down the river.
What do you mean?
I mean, we ain't gonna do nothing of the sort.
And if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat.
If you'd like to see a list of the 10 clips that were used in our montage, Salute to Sailors and Sailing, you can go to our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com.
Last week, I was in Springdale for a story, driving north on 71B, and drove past Allen's Canning.
Where there is a statue of Popeye.
There is.
I remember when Popeye was stolen.
What, Popeye was stolen?
Popeye was stolen. It was 1988. You may not remember this.
Well, I would have been like, seven.
Okay, you probably didn't.
I don't
you didn't live here yet. Anyway, the statue wasn't like bolted down. And it was stolen in the middle of the night. I was working at Kix. I was the news director at Kix 104 at the time. And we had the local newspapers. They were afternoon newspapers. Can I sound any older than I'm sounding right now? They were afternoon newspapers at the time, both the Springdale News and the Northwest Arkansas Times. But all the reporters had a lot of fun with it. Popeye was eventually discovered after an anonymous tip. I think maybe on the side of a dirt road or in a ditch. I can't quite remember. But then was placed back where he should be, and bolted down hard. But it was a fun story for a couple of days. For Popeye.
Yeah. He's a tall Popeye. He'd be hard to hide, I would think.
Hard to hide. And if I remember correctly, this has been a while ago, obviously, 26 years. It wasn't as heavy as you would think. Apparently, if you could get him off the pedestal. Now they have corrected that. They bolted him down. I think he's been filled in. I don't know. But it's harder, obviously, because the Popeye has remained there since that 1988 episode.
All right. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Siloam Springs.
Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Antoinette Grajeda has the holiday show tomorrow, a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large for Martin Luther King Day.
Yes.
I'll be back with her on Tuesday. You'll be with her on Wednesday. You and I back together on Thursday.
That's the schedule.
That is.
It is also Dolly Parton's birthday, so we will end today's show with Jolene by Dolly Parton.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 because you can. Your beauty is beyond compare, with flaming locks of auburn hair, with ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. Your smile is like a breath of spring, your voice is soft like summer rain, and I cannot compete with you, Jolene. Talks about you in his sleep, and there's nothing I can do to keep from crying when he calls your name, Jolene. And I can easily understand how you could easily take my man, but you don't know what he means to me, Jolene. Jolene, Jolene, of men, but I could never love again. He's the only one for me, Jolene. I had to have this talk with you. My happiness depends on you, and whatever you decide to do.